The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private. Trust Ireland's leading private hospitals with locations nationwide, including Dublin, Cork and Limerick.
This is News Talk.
Within 6 months of each other, there were two tragic crashes of Boeing 737 MAX airplanes. None of the 346 passengers and crew members aboard survived. Well, now a report into those fatal accidents has been released. Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel, Airport Safety and Security Auditor, is on the line now. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about that congressional report. It does not pull its punches with Boeing. And to use a colloquial expression, it seems that Boeing have been feckless in the production of the 737 MAX.
Yes, we're talking about the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee report released just 2 days ago. And they looked at 600,000 pages of records, and they basically hammered the Federal Aviation Administration for not doing its oversight job in terms of regulations with regard to the certification of the Boeing MAX aircraft. And unfortunately, though, it's sort of sprung along congressional lines in that the Republicans don't fully agree with that. It was a majority report put out by the Democrats, so it's beginning to break down on political lines. And that's a pity, I think, because aviation safety doesn't need that kind of thing. But they say things like a horrific combination of engineering flaws, mismanagement, and the severe lack of federal oversight. So it's not good news from that point of view.
Now, the secret weapon, if you like, that Boeing had installed in this aircraft was a thing called MCAS, because the design of the aircraft was as such that it, in certain flight conditions, might tilt upwards and this thing would automatically tilt it back down.
Yes.
But pilots were not told and the general public was not told.
No, and in fact, it was moving so fast that really even a well-trained pilot might not be able to overcompensate for it and get it back into flying mode, as it were. And it only used, for example, one angle of attack sensors. They've revised that now considerably, and they put in extra layers of protection. It will activate only once from now on and will never provide more input than a pilot can counteract using the control column alone, which meant they couldn't do it in the first place. In other words, it was too much too fast, and the training given on it was completely inadequate for the purposes of its installation. So nowadays, the new system will allow pilots to override the MCAS, the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. What a mouthful. So they'll be never happen again. That's the theory behind the current scheme of things.
Yeah. Now, the FAA, which is the authority which ordains that an aircraft is fit for going into service or otherwise, it should never have got past them, but it did.
No, and I think that the problem is they work hand in glove. In other words, the people coming out accept the bona fides of Boeing at their face value, and they said, you've been doing this for years. They've made 7,000, 8,000, 9,000 of this type of aircraft. This is a serious modification, but Boeing said it's okay, so we'll go through it, we'll do it. It might be suitable for control by people who are test pilots, but it certainly wasn't suitable for those who are what we call line pilots, ordinary pilots flying aircraft. In the case of the accidents with Lion Air and Ethiopian Airways, both of which had reasonable reputations in terms of safety. But if the aircraft does things you don't expect it to do and you don't have time to overreact or control it, then it's a very serious flaw, and it was accepted by the authorities. Now, the future of that means that they're testing it now. It's back in the air and has been for some time. They've done over 3,000 flying hours with updated software, and the Federal Aviation Authority have re-examined it in the States. The aircraft recently flew to Canada, which is a strange one for me, and the people from the European Union, the EASA pilots, have gone to Canada and they're now testing it. So we no longer accept the American bona fides. Up to now, certification was reciprocal. If Airbus put an aircraft out from Europe, the Americans accepted it, as did the world, and vice versa. The Americans said, this is good. FAA said this aircraft is fit to fly. We'll now accept it. That day is unfortunately now gone.
Okay, so it's what we're all too familiar with in terms of building regulations. Self-certification does not work, and we know it doesn't work. Anyway, it does mean that there'll be a lot more testing of every aircraft that is released by authorities in Asia, in Europe, and on the North American continent. So the more people testing, the more likely it is that any flaws that are there will be discovered early.
And this is a good thing because actually probably the Boeing do make good aircraft, let's be honest. There's literally thousands of them. You know, there's hundreds over the European airspace. I just looked at it some time ago. There's about maybe 100 737s flying over European airspace as we speak. So they're quite a good aircraft. So when this flaw, which should never have been there in the first place, has been configured and will be fixed, we will have a good product because, after all, it carries more people, it is more fuel efficient, and it makes less noise. So it is, to some extent, the future of aviation.
Now, in the meantime, do we have any aviation in this country going forward? Because we know that there's a threat that Ryanair might pull out of Shannon and Cork and divert their aircraft elsewhere. Aer Lingus might also be doing something similar. So where do we stand at the moment with the green list, a couple of countries off, a couple of countries on, but heading for harmony with the EU within 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I thought you might introduce me as a former retired aviation auditor because I haven't worked since February. There have been no inspections from that point of view because aviation is dead, or it has been. The figures stand for themselves. I just looked up the Irish aviation ones. Dublin Airport had in August, that's last month, 7,786 flights. That's a 65% decrease. Cork saw 732 movements. That's down 68%. And Shannon had about 60% decrease. Also, the figures flying across the Atlantic are very moribund. You know, it's down nearly 70% compared to previous August a year ago. And at state airports, it's just down. Everything is down, down, down. The aviation business is in the doldrums, not just because we can't fly, but because we don't know what the future holds. And this is the whole kernel of the problem. If you could tell me we're going to be up and running by January 21 or even March 21, we'd have some future. People cannot fly because the listing system is so poor. One complaint I will make on a personal note is I don't understand why we can't follow the European Union rules completely and say, look, we will go whatever the European Union says. We are an island nation. We're very sensitive to people coming in and out. We had 38 million passengers, tourists last year to our island, and we need them more than ever. We also need to go abroad ourselves for all sorts of purposes, including, you know, holidays and business and so forth. But without a long-term prospect, we've got an awful situation where people are losing their jobs, those who work in the aircraft flying them, in the cabin crew, those who maintain them, the air traffic controllers, even the fire people who work at the airports. Everything is in serious jeopardy, particularly coming to a head when the money provided by the state to keep people furloughed, as it were, stops, as it surely will do by the end of this year. I have, unfortunately, not a good humour. I don't think it's a good place to be just at the moment. It's so uncertain.
The extraordinary battle in the High Court between Ryanair and the government. And I must say, I'm quite astonished at the government's defence, which is, of course, before a judge, not before a jury.
Yeah.
So they're saying that it was never mandatory. What are you talking about, Ryanair? If you wanted to fly, you could fly. Of course you could.
Yes, but the advice is, somebody said to me just last week, will you be going to one of these Christmas fairs? I said, I'd love to go back to Paris or to Vienna or whatever, you know, but I said, I don't dare book it because if you book it now and they put it on the red list or whatever list it might be on, you might lose your deposit, you might lose all your money, and or you might not have holiday insurance. If the government recommends that you only fly on essential flying, you automatically lose, as far as I know, any pretense of having holiday insurance. Therefore, if you broke your leg skiing or if you fell down the street or whatever, you wouldn't be covered. You cannot risk that kind of thing in a country, in any country outside our own. It's a very unsatisfactory place to be. There doesn't seem to be a pan-national system in place for the European Union because the borders open and the borders close, and one week it's good news and one week it's bad news. There's flare-ups here and close-downs there. Look at the north of England. I was looking at the news last night and whole chunks of the northeast of England are now closing down and under various kinds of lockdowns.
So I think 10 million people in lockdown this morning in Britain. The question, though, of why everything here is advisory and not mandatory, is that, I wonder, to avoid legal action? You know, if the government tells you to do something and there is a consequent cost to you for doing what they tell you, then you sue them if they've done you harm.
I have to say they put together an aviation advisory board some months ago now, and very little part of that has been accepted by them. So it appears that the emphasis we have in transport doesn't take into account how vital it is. I mentioned all these people who could be out of jobs, not just here, but in other countries as well. I also mentioned, or maybe I should mention in passing, the fact that leasing companies have, there are about 150 of them globally, but about half of those are based in Ireland. And the business is worth $300 billion per year. And they're in serious jeopardy now because the airlines to which they've leased aircraft, can't pay because they can't fly. So they're on all sorts of deferred payments and so forth. But that's going to come home to roost at some stage of the game. We need a philosophy and a policy that says we're going to live with this. The airlines and the airports, in fairness to them, have come up to the plate as best they can. And you can see it online. What does it look like? What does the new airport regime look like? It's touchless. You're going to wear your mask, that kind of thing. The aircraft flying itself is going to be relatively safe. You might have a problem at both ends, but the airports in all parts to which we can fly, which are few enough, are well run as far as I can tell, and they're taking it seriously because they do not want any breakouts of COVID-19 where they are.
So finally, Kevin, a vaccine is the panacea for all ills. If it rolls out in any way rapidly, do you think that we might be looking at summer 21 as being not quite back to normal because people will take time to regain the confidence to fly? There'll be probably special offers from all the airlines to get us in the air.
Yes.
But, that is really the answer to our woes. A vaccine.
Not just that. I think it's even more than that. From listening to some of your contributions over the weeks now, I think it might be not just a vaccine, but a viral treatment. If you could take the fright out of it and say, look, if you catch this, we have, as was the case with HIV and AIDS, they had not a vaccine, but a viral treatment, which meant the chances of you dying actually in hospital from it are minimized, down to the minimum number. If we can take the fright out of that and say, okay, you might get COVID-19, you might have it, but if you take this, we'll take you to hospital and you'll be out in 2 weeks' time with very little, long-term aspects to your condition. If we can do that and take the fright away, we will put confidence back into people. People are now looking about, lockdown to Christmas, and that's not good news. But if you can't plan, it's very good for people to fly on holidays and visit their families. I'd like to go to Western Australia to visit my grandchildren, but I can get as far as Dubai, but the Australians won't let me in. And there are other parts of the world which are locked down now, which have been the case for months. They take the lock off and away they go. We need confidence. We need a plan. I do ask the Minister for Transport to put together a plan and say, look, we're going to live with this and these are the conditions you have to do. Advising people to not to go except for essential travel is, in my view, a cop-out, and it frightens those tourists who might come to a place like Ireland and spend their money, if not in 2020, certainly in the early and middle part of 2021. I'm hoping against hope, Pat, that by June of next year we will have something in place that will ameliorate the conditions that frighten us off from flying at the moment.
Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel and out of work airport safety and security auditor, at least for the moment. Thank you very much for joining us, Kevin.